Welcome to the Word at First Pres. During Advent, we are doing a series called Christmas Tableaus. A tableau is an illustration, often with religious overtones. The idea of each sermon will be to take an object from the story of Jesus' birth and discuss how it informs our faith. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful Advent and a very Merry Christmas.
And our first reading today comes from Luke, the first chapter, verses 5 through 13. In the days of King Herod of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah, who belonged to the priestly order of Abijah. His wife was a descendant of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Both of them were righteous before God, living blamelessly according to all the commandments and regulations of the Lord. But they had no children, because Elizabeth was barren, and both were getting on in years. Once, when he was serving as priest before God and his section was on duty, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to enter the sanctuary of the Lord and offer incense. Now, at the time of the incense offering, the whole assembly of the people was praying outside. Then there appeared to him an angel of the Lord standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was terrified, and fear overwhelmed him. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, for your prayer has been heard. Your wife, Elizabeth, will bear you a son, and you will name him John." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Second scripture reading is a continuation of this same story. Zechariah said to the angel, "How will I know that this is so? For I am an old man, and my wife is getting on in years." The angel replied, "I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to bring you this good news. But now, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their time, you will become mute, unable to speak, until the day these things occur." Meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah and wondered at his delay in the sanctuary. When he did come out, he could not speak to them, and they realized that he had seen a vision in the sanctuary. He kept motioning to them and remained unable to speak. When his time of service was ended, he went to his home. Now, the time came for Elizabeth to give birth, and she bore a son. Her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had shown his great mercy to her, and they rejoiced with her. On the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to name him Zechariah after his father. But his mother said, "No, he is to be called John." They said to her, "None of your relatives has this name." Then they began motioning to his father to find out what name he wanted to give him. He asked for a writing tablet and wrote, "His name is John." And all of them were amazed. Immediately his mouth was open and his tongue freed, and he began to speak, praising God. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Well, if you can believe it, here we are in Advent. We are hurtling towards Christmas. And I have to tell you that Advent for me is actually one of the harder times to preach. Judy loves it. She's the best. I said, "You can have all these if you want them." But she said, "No, you're the head of staff. This is what you're supposed to do." And the reason I struggle with Advent is not because I don't like it. It's a great season. We're building up to Christmas. What's not to like? The problem is that the number of scriptures you have to work with are very minimal. They're a very small amount of text, and there's only so much you can do with them. So what I tend to do is I'll do those texts, and then for a couple of years, I'll go and do something else, and then we'll come back. Well, this is a year we've come back. And as I was preparing for this series, I sat down and I started reading through all the texts again, trying to figure out, can I do something new with this that I haven't done before? And something popped out at me that I'd never seen before, which is that almost every single one of these stories hinges on an object that without that object, the story could not occur. And so I saw this happen again and again and again. And so I ended up coming up with the series that we're going to be doing right now. It's called Christmas Tableaus. Now, if you've never heard of that word tableau before, all that means it's an illustration, usually with a religious overtone. If you've ever seen an actual tableau, it's usually based on a famous painting or a picture, and it's people kind of recreating it in real life. Have you ever seen one where, like, the people in the painting are actually, like, standing still? They'll do it for, like, an hour at a time, right? And then all of the things in the painting, all the objects, they're recreated with real objects. And so as I read the stories, I realized that there's these scenes. They're like paintings or portraits. And that if you were to pull the object out of the scene, that it could make for a very interesting series where, as we dive into what that object means, it kind of illuminates for us what these stories are about. So each week, we're going to be looking at one of these illustrations. Maybe it's an object, maybe it's an animal, maybe it's some type of thing. Whatever it is, we're going to look at it each week, and there's five of them. So today, we're talking about Zechariah's tablet. Next week, we're going to be talking about the sheep. There will be real, live sheep here in the sanctuary. We're going to see how that goes. I don't know how it's going to go. It could go really well. It could go really south. It's going to be entertaining no matter what, so I suggest you be here. The next week, we're going to be talking about the star over Bethlehem. I asked Judy if she would get me a neutron star. She said, that's not possible. I said, I'm the head of staff. She said, I don't care. I'm retiring. So that's the respect I get. So the week after that, we are going to be doing the treasure chest from the Magi, and then on Christmas Eve, of course, we're going to do the manger. So each week we'll take these items, and I think you'll find there's actually a lot of interesting information about these items, and it's going to expand not only your understanding of the story, but the understanding of your faith. So today we start with Zechariah. Let's begin with him, shall we? So who is Zechariah? Well, he was a priest in the Jerusalem temple. What is the Jerusalem temple? This is a recreation of what it looked like. It's where the Jewish people would come to worship God. It was the central focus of their worship. And when they would come there, they would often worship in the way that you all are doing, but they would also sacrifice animals as a way of being forgiven. This was common to what they would do. The reason why the Jerusalem temple is mentioned in Jesus' story is because it plays a central role not only in Judaism, but kind of in the life of what he's here to do. So Zechariah, just so we're clear on this, he's a lower level priest. There are all kinds of priests who operated in the temple. He was lower level. It says in the story that you heard from Judy, what does he do? He goes and he lights incense, right? That's a lower level guy. He does administration. And there are all these different priests in there. To be a priest in the temple, though, you had to be approved by Rome. Rome oversaw the temple. You could not be in there, Zechariah included. You got to be loyal to Rome. And so it was seen as this corrupt institution. Yes, it was the center of worship in Judaism, but because Rome had a hand in it, they felt like, well, this institution, it's really something that, frankly, doesn't belong to us anymore. And so the reason why it's a part of Jesus' story is because there's this idea that he's going to purify the Jewish religion, and he's going to remove the need for the temple, because his sacrifice will remove the need for doing animal sacrifices anymore. Are you with me on this? You following me? Okay, so that's why we're going into this here. Now, according to the story, Zechariah and Elizabeth are old in age, and Elizabeth is barren, meaning she can't have children. So not being able to have children in the ancient world, if you were a woman, this was a big deal, because this is where you derived a lot of your worth and value at that point in time. Not just having girls, but especially boys to carry on the family name. And being that they are both getting along in years, this ship has sailed. Now, I don't know if you remember, but this story is a callback. It's a throwback to a book in the Bible that I particularly like. I don't know if you can guess what that book is. Can you? Oh, Genesis. Thank you. Right there. Okay. This is a repetition of the story of Abraham and Sarah. So in that story, right, both of them get along in years. Sarah can't have a child. God comes to Abraham and says, your wife, Sarah, she will bear a child for you. This causes Sarah to laugh because she's so old. But then she becomes pregnant and she gives birth to her son, Isaac. Same basic story, what we're dealing with here. So Zechariah, he is told by an angel, your wife will become pregnant, she will bear a son. Zechariah is understandably skeptical about this. And because he is skeptical, he is punished. The angel says, well, because you don't believe me, I'm going to punish you. You're not able to speak. So his disbelief causes him to become mute, which I find to be kind of a fascinating punishment. Because there's an interesting correlation between a person's belief in something and their ability to speak about it. So have you ever come across a salesperson and they really believe in the thing that they're selling? Have you ever come across somebody like that? Okay, when they really believe in it, when they're excited about it, right? You're like, man, I gotta have this thing. Whatever this is doing for this person, it's obviously important to them. And it can be infectious, right? You can be like, oh yeah, I wanna do that. Have you ever met a salesperson, by the way, who doesn't believe in what they're selling? That's also fun for a completely different reason, because they're trying to sell you this thing, you could tell they would never use it. My favorite story about this is actually a story of Adam and TC. So Adam and TC, they used to go out to lunch together all the time, and they would go to Buffalo Wild Wings, which is right in the same cuisine area as Pizza Hut Buffet, just so we're clear on that, right? So they would go to Buffalo Wild Wings, and one day they got their meal, they finished their meal, and they had some leftovers, and they asked the waitress, does this travel well? Meaning, can we take it home and reheat it? Will it be good afterwards? And the waitress looks at them and goes, I never eat this food. Now that tells you something if the waitress who works in your restaurant doesn't eat the food that she's bringing to your table. Now to their credit, they did move on from Buffalo Wild Wings, right? But every once in a while, I love this, Adam would be like, you know, I think we should try it one more time just to see what would happen. And he always regretted it afterwards, always. That's not the only area, though, where belief comes into play, belief in speaking. Have you ever had a conversation with somebody, and in that conversation, you're talking, and the other person is silent? Now, what's interesting is that there's one of two reasons why the other person is silent. Whatever it is you're talking about, maybe they don't have an opinion. They don't know anything about it, so they're just listening to you. Or, more likely, they do have an opinion, and their opinion differs from yours, and they don't want to say anything for fear that you're going to get into an argument. Silence can speak volumes. Another way that this can happen is when you're getting to know somebody. It's always interesting to me what people tell you about their life and what they omit. So I go to the gym all the time. I'm always meeting new people. And when I meet new people, I'm fascinated by what they tell me about their lives. And there's one guy, I have an example of this. I knew a guy for 5 years. And 5 years in, I find out that he has a wife and children. No clue. He'd never mentioned that to me in the 5 years that we've been talking to each other. It clearly tells me how important his wife and children are to him that he wasn't going to tell me about that. But what people say, it's what matters to them, right? And what they leave out, it's what they don't care about. And in the same way, right, when you believe in something, you'll speak about it. When you don't believe in it, you become silent. And that's what happens to Zechariah. Now, as the story goes, Elizabeth, she does get pregnant. She does give birth to a son. And on the eighth day, which is where they go in Jewish tradition, and they circumcise the son, that is when you name the son. And so they say, well, what are you going to call this boy of yours? Now, normally, you would call him something in the father's line of names. But she says, and she's aware of what the angel said, we're going to name him John. Now, the people who are around are like, well, that doesn't make any sense, right? In Judaism, you name it based on a family name. That tradition, if you know anybody who's Jewish, you have Jewish relatives, it's very important that you name people in the family. And then they turn to Zechariah, who still cannot speak, and they say, what is his name going to be? And he takes out a tablet that would look something like this. Okay, I want you to zoom in on it so people at home can see it. So this tablet, and I'm going to pass this around so all of you can see what it is. There's wax in the tablet. And what they would do is they would write on the wax, and then when they were done with it, they would take the wax out, they would ball it up, they'd reheat it and lay it in there, and then they could write on it again in the future. So I'm going to pass this to the choir first, and then they'll pass it up to you. Everybody will get a chance to see it. Does that sound good? So he writes down his name is John. And of course, he's going to grow up to become who? John the Baptist. And John the Baptist will do, there's one important thing that he really does for Jesus, which is he actually baptizes him. And then scholars believe that it is likely that Jesus was part of John's movement before he ventured out on his own. Now, what's interesting about this, though, is that when John writes down, or when Zechariah writes down John's name on the tablet, that is when the punishment is lifted. He's able to speak upon writing it down. The question is, why? Why does that happen? Well, what we don't often appreciate today is that the ancient people who lived at that time, they thought that words had very special powers to them. So let's say you lived in the ancient world and you wrote words down on a contract or in a book. Those words were seen as binding because they came from you and they were seen to be as a part of you. So when Zechariah writes down John's name on the tablet, that is when it becomes binding. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. Now, part of the reason why they felt that it was binding is because of the illiteracy rate in the ancient world. So, for example, in the area where Jesus came from, which is the area known as Galilee, the illiteracy rate was 96% in that area. 96% of the population had no idea how to read or write. It is likely that Jesus himself did not know how to read or write. And so if you had that particular ability, that was a very special power that people didn't always have. Compare that to today, though. Today, 87% of the global population has the ability to read and write, is literate. And in industrialized nations, it's as much as 99% of the population. Now, because of that, we've kind of lost touch with the power of the written word, particularly with computers and social media. We are kind of callous with our words, if I'm being honest with you, right? Like, we vomit whatever words come into our mind onto Facebook and Instagram and to Twitter, just kind of comes out. And we don't really appreciate the power of words to literally change people's lives. And I will tell you that a big part of the reason why I became a pastor, a big part of the reason why, is because I understand the power of words. I saw the power of words to impact people's lives. Even though I stand up here and I don't look at my notes while I'm speaking, I've written down everything that I say. And the reason why is because I want to know that what I'm saying, I want to know that I've thought it through, because this can impact the way you look at the world. It'll impact your faith. That whole series that we just did, the Come to Jesus moment, I'm sure many of you are glad that's done, right? That series was when we were talking about very difficult, challenging, but important things. And if I didn't take the time to really think through what I was talking about with that, because I have to go along a tightrope, I know that I could upset a lot of people. And if I upset too many people, you may not come back. So I got to make sure that I'm doing it the right way. So words matter. They impact people. You all understand this. Even if you've never been where I am, you understand this. How many of you in here, in the heat of the moment, have ever said something in anger that caused a rift in your relationship? Has that ever happened to anybody? Anybody who's not raising their hand? You're lying. Everybody in here has had that happen to them at some point or another, where you've said something in anger that you shouldn't have said. Now, when you say that to somebody, when you say something in anger, that other person hears it, it stays with them, right? Now, imagine if you take those same words that you spoke out loud and you write them down. Now they have a permanency to them. You can come back to them over and over again. This is the power of the word. It almost is like in writing them, they come to life. So as you all are kind of passing around that tablet and looking at it, I think it can be very easy for us to say, well, that's an ancient artifact. It doesn't really matter. It's not that important. Well, it's a medium of writing things down. It's an ancient medium, but it's a medium nonetheless. And once you write it down, it has a permanency, and it gives those words a life of their own. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that. So think about Jesus' movement. When Jesus dies, after he dies and he has his resurrection moment, what happens? People start telling stories about Jesus. Hey, did you hear this about Jesus? I got this story about Jesus. This is a parable he told. And they start passing along. How they do it orally, right? It's oral tradition. Do you know why you're sitting here today? Because somebody 40 years after Jesus' death and resurrection took the time to write those words down into a narrative that we call a gospel. Think about that. Because somebody took the time to write that down, 2,000 years later, you're sitting here in this place. You would not be sitting here had they not done that. That's the power of the written word. And that's why when Zechariah writes on that tablet, it makes a difference. Those words come to life. And remember what I told you. I said that when you write something down, it is what? It is binding, right? Another reason why it's binding, this is really important, is that the ancient Hebrews believed that words, they had the ability to shape and form our reality. They had the ability to shape and form our reality. I'll give you an example of this. Genesis chapter 1, when God creates the heavens and the earth. Does God just create the heavens and the earth? No. God speaks them into existence. In John chapter 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Who's the Word? The Word is Jesus, right? And so Jesus, he becomes the embodiment of God's Word. He speaks the gospel, and in doing that, he forms and shapes and changes people's realities. Now, I don't know if you believe in that idea. Do you believe in the idea that words have the ability to shape and form people's realities? I mean, I do. I believe that very strongly. Even more so than me just standing up here and speaking to you, I believe that speaking words into the world can have a profound effect. And I want to tell you a story of a time when I spoke words into the world, and it changed the trajectory of my life completely. So I was working as an associate pastor back in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Pine Street Presbyterian Church. I've been working really hard on getting a new mission up and running for them. We've done all kinds of research, and we figured out that in Harrisburg City Schools, the graduation rate was 47%. Very, very low. And so what would happen is people would drop out, and eventually in their 20s and 30s, they'd realize, if I'm ever going to get a better job, I have to at least have a GED. Like, I got to go back, and I got to get that to move on. Because they couldn't move up. They couldn't do anything with their lives. There was a GED center in Harrisburg, but they were booked. They had a massive waiting list for people to get in. So we teamed up with them, and we said, we're going to become an extension of what you guys are doing. And we called it the Adult Learning Center, a place where people could come work on getting their GEDs. Great idea. So I go before the session, which is the elders of the church who are going to have to vote on this. And I give a big presentation. And there were still some variables that we hadn't gotten together yet. And a good friend of mine, who was an elder at that time, he said, Alex, this is a great idea, but we still don't have enough information. We need to wait. You need to get all these other factors in place, and then we can vote on it. And he was right. Like, they didn't have all the information. But I came up to him after that meeting, and I said to him, you know, you were right about that. I'm sorry that I was pushing so hard, but one of the reasons why I was doing that is because I might have a new job in a few months, and I may not be here to see this through. That might not seem like that big of a deal, right? Oh, you're going to get a new job. Big deal, Alex. But what you have to realize is that when I said that, that was the first time I had ever spoken those words out loud. Meaning, I hadn't been looking for other jobs. I was like, oh yeah, there's all these prospects out there for me to look at. I didn't have my resume together. I hadn't even spoken to my wife about looking for a new job at that point in time. But I said it because it felt true. And so I spoke those words out loud into the world. And 4 months later, I get a phone call. It's a message on my machine. It's from Tom Carroll. He's the chair of the pastor nominating committee here. He says, I want to talk to you about this head of staff position here at this church. So I spoke those words into the world, and they came to life. Thanks for hearing them, Tom. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you hearing those words. So the idea is that just like God, we can speak our reality into existence. And so the question I want to pose to you this morning is there something on your heart that you need to speak into the world? So maybe there's an idea, something you've had in your mind, something that you've been thinking about for a while, but you haven't said anything to anyone because you're afraid that you might get judged for it. I say, speak it into the world. Maybe you're in a relationship with somebody, and in that relationship, you need to say something to them, but you haven't quite got up the courage to say it. Maybe you need to say to them, hey, we need to be together. Or maybe you need to say, hey, we need to be apart. Whatever it is, I say, speak it into the world. Maybe you're confused about what the next steps are in your life, where you're going to go, how you're going to get there. What are you going to do to make that happen? I say, talk into the world. Speak into the world your concerns. I'm not saying you have to go talk to somebody. Talk it into the world. I do that all the time. It is amazing to me the way God in the universe will answer you back. Or maybe your concerns have nothing to do with you. Maybe it has to do with other people in your life, your family, your friends, your children. I say sit down, talk to them. Tell them about your worries, your fears, your hopes, your dreams. Speak to them. Write it down so it has permanency, because those words that you speak, those words can form and shape people's realities in ways that are hard to imagine. And so as we leave here today, as we go out from here from on the first day of Advent, I want you all to think about how as we anticipate the birth of Jesus, that words have the ability to change our world. They absolutely do. When God spoke, reality came into existence. When Jesus spoke, the gospel came into existence. And God is still speaking through us. God gave us the gift of language to change our lives. So don't be shy. Speak it into the world. Write it down so it has permanency, because you never know how God might bring those words to life. Amen.
Thanks for listening. And if you want to learn more about First Presbyterian Church of Arlington Heights, please visit www.firstpresah.org for more information on service times, directions, and to learn more about the First Pres family of faith.